Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Freaking go. I'm really excited about tonight's guest. It is none other than Mr. Blake freaking Ruffino. And on top of that, last night's guest, Seth Lewis, absolutely crushed it. And here's what's really interesting about all of it is that as excited as I am about LSU football doing the damn thing, getting geared up for a college football playoff run in 2025 and 2026, it's when the playoff games are actually played. I need them to be great. I need them to. Because as much as I love LSU baseball and LSU women's basketball, my favorite American sport behind LSU football, or should I say American team, are my New Orleans Pelicans. And they did something diabolical last night in the draft. So I'm going to share my thoughts on that a little bit later. But the big thing that a lot of you bring up often in our live chats is, can we get back to the LSU defense of old? Will we see the LSU defense ever come close to being as good as it was from 2000, basically, to the mid-2010s? And then basically, from 2020 until now, like, really think about this. For half a decade, the LSU defense has been mostly a mess. 2019 LSU defense, I've shared the story plenty of times. Yes, they did have some poor outings, but overall, that was a very good unit. But the past 5 years, you can make a strong case that LSU's defenses have been a bottom three defense in the entire Southeastern Conference. Now, I think that's a little bold, but compared to expectation and compared to where LSU actually recruits and compared to what the history is of LSU's defense going all the way back to Tommy Casanova until now, this has mostly been a good defense. Mostly. But here's the problem. We've sucked. We have sucked defending the pass, but in particular, we have sucked defending the run. And we have talked quite a bit about the LSU rush defense. A few months ago, we did a deep dive on a stat called RYBC, which is rush yards before contact. That means how many yards do you give up before a defender even touches you? Rush yards before contact, to me, is a very telling stat. Because what that can tell you is not only are you giving up quite a bit of rushing yards, but how easily are you giving those rushing yards up? Are the running backs and pass catchers and whatnot, are they breaking tackles? Is it an issue of poor tackling? Our rush yard before contact numbers, I won't get into the nitty-gritty. You can go back and check it out for yourself. The thumbnail is RYBC with a picture of Blake Baker. We had the lowest RYBC, according to SEC StatCat, of pretty much any defense in the past 5 years, when you just account for SEC play. So not only has our rush defense not been great, we have had not great resistance at all. We have just been giving up wide open holes to run through. Now, one thing I will say, when it comes to playing defense in the modern day SEC, is that it is harder. And that's not just a convenient excuse, but it's just the truth. You take a look at some of the best LSU teams of all time. And I'm talking about the best of the best. A lot of them were successful, number one, because they were indeed good. They would have been successful against quite a few offenses. But number two is that they also played quite a few bad teams and bad offenses and quarterbacks that weren't ready for the big stage. Take 2019 LSU. They played not one, not two, but three true freshman quarterbacks all in that year. And in essence, it really was four true freshman quarterbacks that they played all that season. Now, all four of them ended up being good quarterbacks, but not in that first season. It was KJ Jefferson. Obviously, Bo Nix is very, very, very good. John Rhys Plumlee, and who is the other? Garrett Schrader, who went on to Syracuse and have a good career. Go back to 2011. LSU played some putrid offenses, but they also played Geno Smith and quite a few other really good quarterbacks. It's just when you look at LSU's schedule next year, yeah, there are some quarterbacks that are better than others, but there's no bad quarterbacks on LSU's schedule next year. Not a single one. If Talen Green of Arkansas, who threw for 3,000 yards last year, is a bottom three quarterback on your P4 schedule, you're looking at a very tall hill to climb. So you look, most of the best LSU defensive performances have come versus bad offenses. They just have. So while I am very high on this LSU defense, while at the same time being honest about how things have really been over the past couple of seasons, we also do need to look back at what the LSU defenses of old actually look like to what the actual reality is of now, where every team in the SEC has really good quarterback play. Every single one of them. I think Missouri's Bo Prabula, however you pronounce his last name, did a film study on him on Power Hour SEC. Go check it out for yourself. I do think he can be very good. Now, you don't play him next year, but that's a guy who's bottom three on everybody's QB list. That kid's got wheels. So, we welcome everybody in on a glorious Thursday. I get a lot of these messages here, and this was actually the first message I came in. Gorilla. Carter, just like last year, I apologize for my absence. Too busy celebrating our dub. JK here to ride out the rest of the offseason with you, my friend. I want to look at every single one of you in the face right now. I am very lucky to get to do this every freaking day. Do I make a lot of money doing this? No, I've had have I had opportunities to actually do something to make money, like big money. Sure, but I am not giving this up until I'm making six figures doing this channel. All right. This is so damn fun for me. I wish everybody could get to do this very thing. Someone who we have coming up on our channel here in a few minutes, he gets to do this very thing. I'll ask him this very thing as well. This is the best job in the world. I really do mean it. You do not have to apologize when real world things happen, right? It is indeed the off season. Now, the truth is, I actually do enjoy off-season shows because they are way more challenging than in-season shows. In-season shows, the storylines write themselves. But in the off-season, you really have to get creative. On the SEC channel today, I want to share something about Baker Mayfield. So I decided on the SEC channel, because my Oklahoma following is growing, to look back at the biggest Oklahoma loss of the past decade. It is not what Joe Burrow did to them. Oklahoma was always going to get destroyed by Joe Burrow and Justin Jefferson. That was simply inevitable. Every single defense in the history of mankind was not stopping Joe Burrow with that much time to prepare. Not a single one of them. And there are some other Oklahoma losses that people will point to, but the biggest was Oklahoma versus Georgia. So I did a typical PHL deep dive on that game about what actually went wrong in that game. And a few things begin to pop up whenever you compare other great all-time college football offenses to 2019 LSU and just what makes great quarterbacks great, and what makes great offenses great. And to me, what really set Joe Burrow apart is something that Garrett Nussmeier must work on. And it's one thing that Jaden Daniels had in his first season at LSU that Garrett Nussmeier did not have in his first season as a starter. And that is avoiding disaster plays. Now, Garrett Nussmeier is a very good sack avoider. So that means he is very comfortable in the pocket. But sometimes, even though his pressure to sack ratio is really good, And even though his sack avoidance numbers are overall really good, the truth is he can get jittery. And jitteriness isn't the worst thing if you are still avoiding the disaster plays, such as throwing the football away. Now, I will not get into this debate tonight with Blake as we go back and forth, because I'm a little bit more apologetic to Garrett Nussmeier's turnovers, and Blake obviously isn't. But what I would tell you is I watched Oklahoma versus Georgia, and the two things that really allowed Georgia to win that game, outside of Oklahoma making some massive special teams mistakes at the end of the first half and at the end of that game, is that the first thing, Oklahoma had the best tight end wide receiver combo of this era. So they had Mark Andrews, CeeDee Lamb, and Hollywood Brown. All right. And they also had a guy like Dimitri Flowers, who was a really good tight end for them. And they're able to run a lot of 12 personnel because of it. But because of that, Oklahoma did not develop a number three wide receiver. So I look back on a lot of these great LSU teams, and what happens is I begin to see a lot of other great offenses did not have a good number three wide receiver. So you look at the two best LSU offenses of this era, 2023 LSU, they had Kyren Lacy, who was really damn good in that first season as a full-time player. The year before, obviously, he had the drops, and this past year, he was good. And then, of course, Terrace Marshall was really big in the biggest games. Caught a touchdown versus Alabama. That was wide open, but still, caught a touchdown. Caught the decider versus Clemson. Caught the first big one in that brutal game versus Auburn. You got to have a good number three wide receiver. If you're
hiring, isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Are going to be a flawless offense. But the second thing that really jumped out to me, in particular versus Georgia, was Baker Mayfield really struggled avoiding the disaster plays in that game. He took some really bad sacks. And not only were they bad sacks, they were bad sacks for huge amounts of losses, right? Jaden Daniels took too many sacks in 2022, but the sack yardage wasn't that big of a deal. It would be only 1 or 2 yard sack losses. Garrett's really good at avoiding the sacks, but if he's going to do more play extension and stuff like that, you got to avoid the 8 and 9 yard sacks. Baker Mayfield also had a very bad interception that was very preventable, and it was just a bad INT. Garrett cannot have those disaster plays. And the problem is, as we've grown as a football fan base, as we have more access to footage and film and all of that, what happens is when we go and watch games of other teams, we only watch the highlight clips. And what do the highlight clips show you? Well, they show you the touchdowns. They show you interceptions. But what they fail to show you are the throwaways. They fail to show you the sacks that you avoid. So instead of a 12-yard sack, is it going to be a 2-yard sack? Those are absolutely freaking massive. Abso-freaking-lutely massive. And as I fine-tooth comb that Oklahoma versus Georgia game, the best college football playoff game I think that we have had up to this point, obviously, most would say Georgia, Alabama. I'll never admit anything good about Alabama. I'm just kidding. Alabama, Georgia, the championship was probably the best. And then you can argue Georgia versus Ohio State. But to me, Oklahoma versus Georgia had it all. Baker Mayfield and the disaster plays is what really did them in my mind. All right. Now, there was a lot more to it. Garrett has got to avoid the disasters. You just do. And when you really break down 2023 LSU, the second best offense of the past 5 years, and 2019 LSU, the best offense of the past 5 years, and Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels do this now in the NFL as well, notice they don't take 20-yard sacks. They don't take big negative EPA plays. They take what the defense gives them. If the defense gives them nothing, they'll just throw it away. They'll live to fight another down. So many of these Super Bowls are decided by that very thing. Mahomes being the absolute best at it, except this past year he had the disaster plays. And that's why it's very important to watch full games. I remember the Georgia-Oklahoma game as explosive touchdown after explosive touchdown. But Jake Fromm did a really good job of not crapping the bed as a freshman quarterback in that game. So it really is so important. We say hi to Jordan, Jamie, Dex. And Dex is moving up the ranks as the new president of PHL. He's moving up. My cousin Cliff, he's never in here anymore. He watches the other YouTube channels, and he's my actual blood relative. Brandon wants to get inside baseball here. Do I think Kalaj Cobbins would be better suited at star? He's a little undersized to be a true defensive end. That's a good question. And the answer to that is no, he's not a star. Not what he should be doing. All right. So, Brandon, let's talk about this. Because, you know, the point of this video is defense. But I went on a little Garrett Nussmeier tangent after watching Baker Mayfield all day. I will also say that if your college quarterback list does not include Baker Mayfield in the top 10 of the past, like, decade, you're wrong. Because I do think Joe Burrow's better, Jaden Daniels is better, and I know I trash Baker quite a bit. He played that game with the flu, by the way. To do what he did over a four-year period, I know his supporting cast was insane, and he was doing that versus Big 12 defenses. It's still insane what that guy accomplished as a collegiate quarterback. You can make a case he is the best college quarterback ever when you factor in a cumulative season, especially coming from the walk-on to where he is now. It really is a remarkable, remarkable story. All right. So I don't want anyone to think I'm anti-Baker. All right. I actually like Baker a lot. Now, let's talk about the star position, all right? Because the star position is a name with a sexy name, right? It's star, right? Some call it money. Some call it this, that, or the third, whatever. It's important to note, for you to play the star position, it really is a sexier word for a nickel. To me. That's not what it is, but it can be what it is. And to me, I prefer that player to be a defensive back or someone with a defensive back background. Because most teams run 11 personnel. That is what is on the field. Two out of every three plays on average, every year, per Sports Information Solutions. So if there's three wide receivers on the field, you have one corner on one of the receivers, then you have another corner on one of the receivers. So let's just say, to your point, Brandon, that you want Kalaj Cobbins to be a star because he would give you more pass rush and box capability there. Do you want Kalijah Cobbins as a nickel? All right, because if you're going to do that, what Ryan Grubb and all these great offensive play callers are going to do, if they see you're in man-to-man, they're going to send Ryan Williams in motion, and they're going to put Ryan Williams man-to-man on Kalijah Cobbins, and that is just sautéed mushrooms all day. That is unfair to every single human being that has ever walked the face of the earth. That's, in fact, unfair to Ryan Williams. The only way that would be plausible is if Ryan Williams felt sorry for us. So you don't want to be in that position. You got to have guys that can cover at that position. If not, just put a linebacker in there. So I understand that we're trying to find different ways to, play talented player X or Y or whatever. But I keep going back to this as my vision of a football player. In the SEC, where the players on average are the biggest and the fastest and the strongest, per CFB Matrix, friend of the channel who's actually a Pac-12 guy, he says SEC football, per his injury data, their players get injured on a more per-play basis. And his theory is, well, the SEC's got the biggest, fastest, strongest players, and it leads to more injuries. Ultimately, for you to play in this conference, you've got to be thick. This is not a toothpick conference. You've got to have ass. Literally, go ask most NFL evaluators. One of the first things they look for, in particular for trench players, but just in general, they look at your ass. They judge the thickness of your ass. I'm not kidding. This is not me making a joke. There's a really good story in The Athletic. Now, I'm very fortunate to have met and sat in press boxes next to scouts, NFL scouts. They have said the same thing to me. Now, this was many years ago, so this is still happening now. I like my ends thick. Do I like the occasional bendy, skinny pass rusher? Sure. Sure, but you better have real bend, and you better for real give me good bend and good pass rush. But if you look, a lot of the best SEC pass rushers over the past couple of seasons, yeah, you have a guy like James Pierce, who is just a freak at Tennessee. He's not really a thick guy. He's kind of a skinnier guy. If you were to look at him, you would think he would be a wide receiver. A lot of these ends are dudes with some thunder thighs. And they got some cottage cheese. Now, you got to have some thickness to play in this conference. So, the way that the LSU defensive end room is shaped up now, you have a good mixture of those guys. Jack Pyburn is my kind of end. Gabriel Relaford is my kind of end. Those dudes are specimen. I've had the good fortune to interview face-to-face Gabriel Relaford. That dude is thick. But you also have guys like Patrick Payton, who's a little bit more of your bendy, slender, long pass deflector type of edge rusher. So you need a good mix. And Kalijah Cobbins, if he can work his way in, he could do that. But he is an edge rusher. All right. Jared, thank you for the super chat. I really appreciate it. Dev, we will ask that question to our guest right after this. It is PHL Live, baby. Mr. Blake Ruffino, fresh from his trip from Omaha, joins us.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I got to show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 spin booth experience serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. Big shout out to my good friend who just got back from Omaha, Nebraska, a young man who had some flight issues on the way back from Omaha. I'm glad you're back, though, Mr. Blake Ruffino.
I am glad I am back as well, and thank the good Lord that those got fixed pretty quickly, and here we are.
Who would you give the number 18 football jersey to?
Oh, brother.
You gave me a sketch, an old brother.
I really don't know. We'll talk about this a little bit tonight. I think that there are two things that play for LSU football at the current moment. You just saw a team win a national title with talent, but with a lot of character. And I think that what's the character of this team? You know, like I always felt like Josh Williams was going to give me everything. I don't know, Carter, to be honest with you. I don't know who gets it. I haven't even really thought about it, to be honest with you. It hasn't even came up in my mind to even think about. So I'm sorry I'm copying out. I have no clue.
That's fine.
Maybe Whit Weeks, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the odds-on favorite at this point. I had you on so many times to chat about LSU baseball. I've kind of moved on to football. But, I mean, you are my go-to for super baseball analysis. Sure. Omaha was what for you?
Definitely a bucket list. You know, I think people don't realize, Carter, like how much money I lost. From not doing post games, but it doesn't, that none of that mattered because I got to see it with my own eyes and be there and meet all the parents and, met Eric Anderson, met Kareen Anderson, the Curiels who were awesome.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
So it was just an awesome bucket list experience and to watch what probably was the biggest thing for me growing up that made me an LSU fan and LSU baseball in the very beginning of it. So it was an experience, man. It was a hell of an experience, a hell of a time. I tell you, with the flight issues that we had, I don't know if I'd ever fly again up there. But I would tell you that it was a hell of a time and a hell of an experience.
Did you think that this team, in your heart of hearts, was like, because you go back to 2023, the entire world thought Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz, a team like that, was going to have a chance.
Tommy White and Tanks gets missed in that conversation a lot, too.
Right. Like, that was – arguably the most talented LSU team ever.
Probably.
But midway through the season, when you were watching this team, you know, outside of the Auburn season, that was like their only like bad series. But
yeah, their only hiccup, right?
I think to me, once again, you watch every pitch. I watch casually. I did not feel like I was watching a national championship team, especially one that would win a championship series 2-0, go undefeated in Omaha and actually win it all. Did you feel that watching this team?
When they beat Arkansas, yes. You know, I said, listen, get through the regional. This is what I said a month and a half ago when they played Arkansas. Get through a regional, get through a super regional, and anything can happen. And I repeated that for a month and a half, and it did. And really and truthfully, the take that I had the longest was put pressure on them to beat what I'm pointing to. I know you do audio too, but pointing to my hat meaning LSU. I mean, Carter, every team that played LSU crumbled at some point because the pressure got to them, and LSU never did that. Arkansas crumbled. I thought in game one, Coastal crumbled. They should have tried to double up Derek Curiel, but they didn't. You know, there were a lot of things that, like, during the season and with baseball and what encompasses baseball, that people overreact too much. Like, you can overreact to football, but because you only have 12 of them versus, I mean, Carter, they played 12 games and they played 10 games and what was it? Oh, no, they played 7 games in 10 days early in the season. Like, you can't overreact to baseball. Baseball is baseball. Carter, if you get a base hit 3 out of 10 times, you're considered really good. Like, you know, and so I don't know if I considered them a national title contender. I did in February and in January said that they were going to go to Omaha, and they did, but they won the whole thing. And I can make the argument had the hardest path to win it all.
It is crazy when you actually watch these games, especially in Omaha, how many coaching mistakes the other teams make versus LSU. You know, one that went way under the radar was UCLA putting their closer in down 3. Do you remember?
I don't think that was a mistake.
Oh, you don't?
I mean, Carter, you got to do everything you can to close in that at 3. Everything, because you don't have a shot if they get another run, and they still did.
Right. I just
here's the thing. They were going to play the next day, and here's the truth. Even if the kid threw 20 pitches, he hadn't thrown really. So he's coming in against Arkansas regardless, because it's your season's on the line. I mean, you got to throw everything at everybody.
Your biggest concern about the LSU defense is what?
Football defense?
Yeah. No.
Safety, defensive tackle, probably equally. I mean, I don't know what AJ Halsey looks like up close and personal. So, I mean, has Deshaun Spears developed any? But, I mean, Carter, that'd probably be the two for me.
What about on the defensive line?
Oh, interior defensive line, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. I don't think that's remotely close. Is it the same for you?
Yeah. I really love LSU's defensive end room. I think it'll be one of the biggest, you know, surprises in the SEC, how good they'll be. But what if you were to put your crystal ball at the end of the season, LSU's best defensive tackle will be who?
Sidir Mitchell.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's and look, when I say that, I don't think statistically that he will be. I don't think from a statistical analysis standpoint that you could do that. Like, for example, Carter, the analytical community is not necessarily massively high on Caleb Banks out of Florida, but he was the most dominant defensive tackle in the country last year, especially the last 6 games of the season.
It's not, oh, yeah. Wait, the whole country?
Yeah, because the amount of penetration and havoc that he created was bigger than anybody in the last 6 weeks of the season. He created more havoc than Walter Nolan. He created more havoc than your boy from A&M. Anything that Texas had going on, or Ohio State. I mean, against you, you do realize he had 7 pressures. I mean, it's not just you that he did it to. He had 9 against Ole Miss. 9. By himself.
Your vision for Harold Perkins looks like what in 2025?
I don't have a vision, personally. You know, for me, Carter, I'm looking at this and saying, listen, Blake Ruffino's taking a step back. I'm just going to go based off of what I see. Because when I start giving my opinion, they don't do it. I mean, the last 4 years, they don't do it. You know, like Harold, I mean, I do think if there is an opinion that I could give is you got to send him like you did Major Burns on third down. And you got to create the defensive ends that you have that can be what I think to be elite and send him along with them. Because I Carter, listen, I don't mean this in a wrong way. And BK said this on Feinbaum the other day. I don't know if you heard it. They got way too predictable with Harold Perkins. They were making him rush in the interior. How, I don't mean this in a wrong way. How dumb is that? You're trying, I mean, they were spying in on him, which in my humble opinion gave Braden Swenson an opportunity to do some special things. But you're rushing him in the interior. How dumb is that? So if you move him to star and then by happenstance, unless they do something different to key in on him, then he's going to go up against running backs and tight ends in pass pro, which then frees up Patrick Payton and whoever, Gabe Rutherford, whoever else you have out there. So it is of my opinion that you got to send the house. And Carter, your DBs have got to play on an island and be good at doing it. Because if you don't, then Harold Perkins means nothing.
Yeah, I agree. I think better corner play will make Harold Perkins better.
Well, not even corner play. Like, because if you're sending a slot, which is basically what he is, that means a safety has got to come down and go in man-to-man, or they got to go some form of quarters, whatever they want to call it as, right? I mean, like, you got to. So I thought a lot of massive problems last year is when they sent Major Burns, ironically, there was no safety that could cover an inside slot guy or a tight end or a running back. And they got eaten alive for it.
Your thoughts on Blake Baker going into next season is what?
My thoughts are, I hope that he can make this into a top 30 defense. You know, like I think for me, I don't know if we knew how good they were last year. In some instances, this is not, I'm not getting on a Garrett thing with you, but listen, Carter, there were multiple times that they had to start their own drive with inside their own 15 or 20 yard line. They did that 6 times last year, 6. And they gave up points on 4 of them. So, I mean, there comes a point in time that I'm saying, like, if you were able to not force turnovers and you were able to punt the football away, and a team had to drive the entire length of the field, how much better could they have been, right? Like, I do wonder about that. They were in the top 55 in total defense, top 57, whatever. They jumped up 50 spots from 107 or 108 to 57. Can they get better would be a big question mark for me.
And your biggest concern about his play calling is what? Do you think he should be more aggressive, less aggressive?
Yeah, more aggressive.
Okay.
Because here's my thing. If you're going to give up the big play anyway, like if the secondary is not going to hold on anyway, and you're playing quarters or you're playing cover 3 or whatever you want to play, or you're going to play Tampa 2, cover 2, whatever you want to call it, why wouldn't you? At least you give yourself a chance. I mean, his best called game was Ole Miss a season ago, without a doubt. And the first half against A&M before the wheels fell off.
Yeah. You know, for me, I look at the LSU defense. and this is what I led my show off with, is they're going to have some tough games because they're playing so many great quarterbacks this next year. So, you know, obviously the big question is how do you match up versus quarterbacks who can move? That was obviously the main big thing about LSU's kryptonite. Do you think that gets better?
All right, I'm sorry. There was some breaking baseball news. Repeat that. I'm sorry.
Well, go. What's the
break? So LSU got a right-handed Tennessee left-handed pitcher and Ryler Smart. Smart redshirted last year in his lone season with the Volunteers, but now is heading to Baton Rouge.
Well, tweet it out. We got to get these retweets.
All right, but yeah, I can do this.
No, but I want you to type the tweet out.
Okay. Right, ask the question again.
No, I want.
Ask the question again. I can do this. Go. What's the question? What was the question?
I actually forgot the question because I was so locked in on Ryler, which is, I love the fact now that the Gen Z millennial mom baseball names are now in college baseball now. Because Ryler is like the perfect travel ball nickname. It's always a Y mixed in there for Ryler. Is it spelled R-Y-L-E-R?
Yeah, like Tyler, but with a R. But
yeah, you see?
Right.
All right,
what's the football question?
No, it's just Ryler's just such – I'm excited he's gone. Is he good?
I don't know. I don't know much about him. Now, I will tell you this. I'll give you something else. It's not their last left-handed pitcher. I think Santiago Garcia from Oregon's another one that people need to keep their eyes on too.
Yes. The Oregon Regional was so underrated, man. There was calamity nonstop in that regional. We got a few Alex Atkins questions in the chat. His influence will be what, in your opinion?
It's a great question. It's a great question because of the fact that, remember last year when BK took over helping with play calling? It is of my opinion that you couldn't be in a situation where BK helps take over play calling and then not help Joe Sloan again. Hopefully he's got a massive say in the run game, but I don't know if Sloan is going to give that to him unless BK puts his foot down and says he's going to do it. So
I agree. Yeah.
I think he's got to be I really think he's got to be involved in the running game. And we will know very soon in game one if how involved he is in that, because of the simple nature, he runs a lot of counter. And if LSU's running a lot of counter, then you're going to know that he's involved. The God's honest truth is, Carter, I think that there's a lot of pressure on Joe Sloan. And I think that you don't bring in a guy like Alex Atkins, okay, to sit in a situation where that as a play caller that he comes here just by happenstance, right? Because he did have a offer to go to Baltimore a year ago. I do think that, and when I mean Baltimore, I mean the Baltimore Ravens.
Yes.
So I do think that there could be a situation where you get into a place where that he kind of takes over the run game and Sloan does majority of the play calling. But Carter, I don't think that Brian, this is my humble opinion. I think he will be involved in some aspects. I don't know how much he will be. I don't even know if he calls actual plays, but the bottom line for me is very simple. Is that I don't think that you can be in a world where you had a head coach help Joe Sloan take over in play calling and you walk that back.
Yeah, and to your point about Joe Sloan being under pressure, there's not a single human being that is breathing in LSU's facility every single day that's under more pressure than Sloan. Not BK, definitely not Blake Baker, not any individual player even. It's him. Like, it's,
you don't think Garrett's got more pressure or just the same amount of pressure as Sloan does?
No, because I think
he's got a lot more on the line than Sloan. I mean, he's got a first round potential number one overall pick on the line.
Yeah, but he's still gonna. I don't think he's gonna fall off to where he won't be drafted at all next year.
No, I'm not saying that. But if you're talking about from a money aspect, I mean, Carter, you're talking about $5 to $10 million that he could lose if he doesn't have a bad year.
Right, and if Sloan has a bad year, he might not ever get another OC chance in the P4.
Very true.
So, I don't know. I was very shocked that Joe Sloan was able to keep his job. But there's a piece of me that's grown on the idea of actually running it back with Joe, even though I was very vocal about his play calling. So we'll see. I mean, in your expertise, do you think there could be a world where an offensive coordinator who struggled actually takes a step forward?
I mean, is there a world where he takes a step forward? Yes, there is a world where he takes a step forward. But here's the problem with that. The problem in us saying that is simple. How do you walk back your head coach helping him with play calling?
It's hard. It's really hard.
No, it's not hard. Carter, it's not hard. It's impossible. Let's just say LSU loses to Clemson and offensively they have struggles. The first question that should be out of the media's mouth will be, how can you help him with play calling a year ago and then not help him now? And then why didn't you make a move to change that during the offseason? And we thought that you did with Alex Atkins, and what is his role? So, listen, there are some things that they got to prove offensively from a play calling standpoint that – Carter, I don't think it's answered until August the 30th.
Are you concerned, to shift topics, about the LSU wide receiver room?
No. I am not.
So there's not a single concern at all with that group for you?
I mean, if Chris Hilton gets hurt, yes. If there's injuries, yeah. I mean, you brought in Nick Anderson, who's also injured, which, by the way, Carter, he is not cleared yet. He's still not cleared. So everybody's like, Nick Anderson's going to come here and dominate. Brother, he's not clear for play. Now, can he be clear for play on August the 3rd? Maybe. I don't know if I have a lot of concerns because I think Berrien Brown can do some special things. I think Chris Hilton and Aaron Anderson can do some really good things, but I think they're going to use more of the possession stuff for both of the tight ends and then use the speed on the outside to generate space. We need Chris Hilton to stay healthy. But the problem on throwing the ball deep on what they want to do is that the offensive line has got to protect. The receiving core that you have on the outside getting downfield means nothing if Garrett doesn't have time to throw it.
Before we let you skedaddle,
okay,
I need that Trade as Green hot take again.
Yeah, I think from an athletic standpoint, he is the most athletic and best player on your team.
I needed it. I needed it in my...
Well, I see a lot of people pushing out Bauer Sharp, and I'm just going to tell you right now, he's bigger, faster, and stronger, and is a better route runner than Bauer Sharp. I think Bauer Sharp has a role on this team. Don't get what I am saying twisted. To anybody who doesn't see a 6'7", 245-pound dude who, by the way, ran 21.6 miles per hour last week, per sources, then what are we doing?
Carter, well, I don't know if he's – I mean, Sharp can fly for a tight end.
Carter, he is faster, bigger, and stronger. Any of you that believe that that is not a truth or a fact, you're crazy. I'm sorry. Brother,
I think Trey Edwards is a
He is the
player.
Best athlete on your team. It is not remotely in the same stratosphere. I'm sorry. It's not. Who's a better athlete than him?
Well, it just depends on your definition.
Who is a better athlete? Then name them.
Well, I could make a case for Caden Durham.
Durham is a foot shorter than him, and they are about the same amount of speed. One ran 21 miles an hour. The other hasn't hit 21 miles. Carter, I don't think you realize what this dude is. Do you realize what this dude is?
That's the thing. You are like you,
Carter. There's no one
on this that does LSU stuff every day is as high on Trey Edwards Green as you are. You are like super.
All right. Now, Caden Durham block a shot from a dude that's 6'7", who just got picked 20th in the NBA draft last night, go down the court and dunk on his ass? Can he do that? Yes or no?
No. If you're talking about multi-sport athleticism, then
it has nothing to do with multi-sport athleticism. If you're that big, strong, fast, it doesn't matter. He is the best athlete on your team. It's not remotely close. Carter, we saw him in spring go over Deshaun Spears to Marcus Cooley and I think Mansoor Delane in triple coverage in the back left part of the pylon, one-hand catch one and come down with it. Y'all crazy if you think that this dude's not the best athlete on this team.
All right, so I'm just, like you and I are really good friends, right?
Yeah.
We're the closest of friends.
Yes.
You're confident. The way that you're talking about him is making LSU fans feel like this guy's going to be as good as like Kyle Pitts or that.
Carter, he has that level of athleticism. No, but hold on. You had a second round tight end in Mason Taylor last year, and Joe Sloan forgot that he existed.
Well, I will say, as far as Mason is concerned, Greg Olson did mention in an interview that he felt Mason Taylor was misused. Now, he didn't go in too into depth.
He wasn't used at all, hardly. Carter, he had two catches in the first drive of the game, and they stopped throwing him the football until he had a massive catch in the fourth quarter. Two massive catches in the fourth quarter. He forgot about him because you want me to be real? I don't know if Sloan knows how to use tight ends.
I will say that Mason Taylor might be the best crunch time LSU pass catcher.
I mean, Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and Odell, they were all pretty special too.
Well, yeah, I was just saying like as many big chain moving, like fourth quarter catches, Mason's up there. But I just wanted to be known. You're the president of the Trey Edwards Green fan club. Now, I want this.
The last time I went this stupid on somebody, the last time I was this hell bent, who was it?
Tell me.
Well, first it was Jay Ward would have a massive impact for your team, and he did. It was Jaden. I promise you, Carter, there is nobody on this team as a better athlete than him. No one. No one. It does not exist.
I love it.
You do realize that Caden Durham or all these dudes are almost a foot, if not 6 to 7 inches. And I will tell you right now, in summer football, as Trey Edwards Green wins the Freak of the Week in week one, Carter, he is bigger, faster, and stronger than all of them. He is. Now, Chris Hilton might be faster. Barry and Brown might be faster. But, Carter, he's got like 70 pounds on him.
Yeah. You're talking about per square inch speed.
Right. Like this, buddy, I am telling you, I was told that he's gained about like maybe 10 to 12 pounds. And he's still, you know, like, I don't know, man. Quitting basketball could have, I think when it's all said and done that he has the athleticism where he could wear a gold jacket at the end of all of this. He is that athletic. I'm telling you, All right. I've seen come to a practice this year. Carter, on God, come to a practice this offseason. And when they go one-on-one and they're doing stuff and they throw them the ball during practice and they refuse to do it during the game, brother, I got to be real. He should have played over C.J. Daniels a year ago. Without a doubt. Why are we throwing C.J. Daniels out there when Tre'Davious Green exists?
I was fine with playing C.J. over.
He's not better.
No, I'm not saying that he is or he isn't, but you have a year five guy versus
fair
a guy who was just there, and C.J. got paid. So I wouldn't and everybody's getting paid, but they paid C.J. to come in and play. But Blake, I know you got a show. We appreciate your time as always, and we'll talk soon, brother.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Blake Ruffino, AYS. His show starts in a minute, and I will be tuning into that. I do have a birthday party to go to. My dear beloved brother is celebrating a birthday, and tonight we are doing a Mexican lasagna party. That sounds kind of sus. But no, my family's getting together. My mother makes a Mexican lasagna. Now, I am not Italian or Hispanic, but Mexican lasagna, don't sleep on it. And it's funny, my mom actually got the recipe from the Daily Advocate like 67 years ago. That's how long ago. She shows me the recipe. It's like crumpled up in like a phone book or something. So I'll take a few more here before we go. Leonard, that's good. He says Blake is spot on. Yeah, all right. So obviously when you do this, I don't want to ever tune into an LSU YouTube channel and everyone just says everybody is great, right? I am higher on Nuss than Blake is. He's higher on Tre'Davious Green than I am. That doesn't mean I don't think Tre'Davious Green is someone that's going to be very good for LSU. That also doesn't mean that he does not think Garrett is going to be very good for LSU. All right. Here's what I think with Tre'Davious that partially concerns me is it is kind of a tweener fit. Tight ends are better served if you are indeed a tight end, as someone that can block and do everything well, like a Mason Taylor. And then some tight ends are obviously Thaddeus Moss was good at everything. Jared says Mason wasn't better than Moss. Ooh, that's a tough one. Obviously Thaddeus Moss went to the NFL probably a year too soon. Thaddeus Moss only played one season at LSU. So it's tough to really compare the two. Thaddeus Moss, 47 catches. Mason Taylor, obviously a lot more than that. They both played their best in the biggest games. Alabama hates both of them probably equally. Probably Mason a little bit more. but Thaddeus could block. Thaddeus could flat out block. In particular, towards the end of the season, in particular in that A&M game, the dude was just tearing souls apart. As a receiver, Tre'Davious clears both of them pretty easily. And Mason was a very good receiver, as was Thaddeus, but Tre'Davious is better. I don't know, speed-wise, I don't think... he is a burner the same way that like a Kyle Pitts was at tight end. But he does have very good speed. Don't get it twisted. It's just there's a difference between having like Brock Bowers level speed and, you know, just like your traditional tight end speed to above average speed. So I don't know. Like, I guess I don't want anyone to think of me being a hater per se, but I'm just a little bit more moderate where Blake is. I could see him wearing I believe he's going to win a gold jacket, wear a gold jacket one day. Or I think he said he might be. I don't know. And you guys, you know, I love a scorching hot take. The one position we did not discuss tonight, which was the LSU offensive line, because on Sunday, we'll be diving deeper on this unit. And I will say a very prominent LSU player's parent reached out. And I always say this to every player's parents or family members, cousins, aunties, main chicks, side chicks, whoever you might be close to LSU players or how you might be related to them. It could even be a neighbor, high school friend. Always feel free to reach out. Let me know your honest thoughts on my takes towards them at Power Hour LSU. Is where you can find me on all social medias, powerhourlsu@gmail.com. And ask anyone. I respond to all of my emails, or I try to. But I didn't want to talk about the LSU offensive line because that will be repeatedly talked about until the start of the season. And it is the biggest weakness on this team. The only thing I'll say about that unit before we leave here is every team has question marks on the offensive line. All right, here's a really, really good example. Ohio State, towards the end of the year, probably had the best offensive line. Probably. I mean, there's a few others. Oregon, you can make a case. I mean, there's a lot of different ones you could point to. Texas, whatever. But towards the beginning of the season, Ohio State did not have that. In fact, the best tape of Jamari Butler was on the road versus Ohio State. But he was going up against a backup who ended up not being a starter. So offensive line is so tough because you're on the field for every single play. If you're a wide receiver that's not good, we could just rotate you out. Rub it up, dub, thanks for the grub. There's five other players ready for your reps and your jersey number, especially if you're a single digit. Let's go to Jerry. He says, all the talk about thickness earlier, Green is taller and leaner. The tight end position requires blocking. Yeah, I don't think Trey Dez is too lean per se. You know, I think it's not like your traditional Charles Barkley power forward build, but it's still a really good thick build. Jared says we do not talk about the offensive line, at least for now. We don't. So there you go. So I did tweet out a clip. If you can, go retweet it. I don't do a whole lot of shorts editing because I'm not really a short form creator per se. But I did release a short from our interview yesterday with Seth Lewis. Okay. And it's pretty much a question that I think about quite a bit as being a diehard LSU football fan and a very, very good New Orleans Saints fan. And I hate when people get those confused. I think it's really hard to be a diehard LSU and a diehard Saints fan. I really do think so. But it's obviously very doable. I honestly think there's really only three teams you could be a diehard fan of. But I asked Seth this question yesterday. Which fan base is wilder or more ruthless, LSU or Saints fans? So go retweet this clip. Trying to get big on the short form media. And we included some clips from Stone Like John and John O'Barnes. Obviously, Devin with the Hold the Mayo is a really good friend of the channel. Chef says Trades doesn't need to block. He is a flanker. F tight end.
Yeah.
True to an extent. Because let's say Garrett is better served and this offense is better served as a hurry-up offense. Well, your offense becomes so much more powerful if your tight end can block some. And Trades' blocking did get better as the season moved on. But what's really interesting, and once again, I shared this earlier, if you're just not joining us, we did a, on Power Hour SEC, we did a deep dive on the Oklahoma Sooners. And man, I watched their offense, and boy, were they good. They were really good at using tight ends. Why were they good at using tight ends? Well, they had two NFL tight ends on their team, Dimitri Flowers and Mark Andrews. And I think a good role, like career play out for Trades would be someone like Mark Andrews, right? Obviously, Trades, I think, has more verticality and better catch radius than Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews probably has a little bit more wiggle, per se. But, you know, it's just not that great of a blocker, but he's a good blocker, right? And if Trades can give you that and you can run 11 personnel with him as your tight end, it can get very sexy very quickly. And the thing about the flanker tight end thing, so let's just say you're running 12 personnel and your Y tight end is Bauer Sharp and your F tight end. I don't really care about the letterings in the X and the Z and all of that. It can get confusing. Not obviously if you're an actual coach or super diehard football fan, but it can be confusing for quite a few fans. Honestly, your offense becomes so much better if everybody on your team can block. Yeah, maybe Mike Gesicki is a better way. Obviously, Gesicki really can't block at all. He's basically just a big slot. Oh, we got a super pause? Let's go. All right, y'all. Big thanks to all of you. We will be live again on Sunday night. Once again, please pray for me as a diehard Pelicans fan. Please, please, please. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Shout out to Jared Addison, our top super chatter of the evening. And we had a good bit of people in here for a dead of the offseason post-baseball celebration live stream. Also, pray for me. We have a pretty big meeting tomorrow for a potential partnership here on PHL. Pretty excited about that. Tonight, we are doing Mexican lasagna. Let's go.